Hello, I'm Nelson Cole.
And I'm Ira Luffing. And this is Sugar House Journal, podcast number one.
Hi, everybody. This is Nelson. Just a quick intro to today's show. It was made on a new recorder I literally unboxed minutes before we began recording. So future shows will only get better. On today's show, Ira and I talk about the recent maple syruping season, Corporation Nation, and Too Small to Fail. Hope you enjoy.
What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I'd like to talk about the recent maple sugaring season. We just got done with our maple sugaring season here in Skowhegan, Maine, and it was a very strange year. We tapped pretty early. We tapped in around the 22nd of February, and we managed to get all our trees tapped and ready and everything. And we had a little run, and it looked like it was coming out pretty nicely. It would have been light syrup. But we couldn't, we just barely got the pan sweetened, which means you just barely get it up to thick enough to make into syrup before it turned cold for about 2 weeks. And during those 2 weeks, we got practically nothing. And then it started up again. We had maybe a week, 9 days of really good weather temperatures for sugaring, where you got over 40 during the day and down below, you know, around 20 at night. And it was the perfect temperature. So we made a little bit of syrup during that time. And then all of a sudden, I began to notice, I go on a website called Maple Trader, and I talked to other sugar makers all over the place. And the guys in Vermont, believe it or not, said they were all quitting. And what had happened was that blob of really, really warm air had come all the way across the country, and it had hit Vermont, and then it sat there for a week before it got to us. So finally, those guys had all quit because it was so warm. All of a sudden, that warm air hit us, and it was 80 degrees. And I have a friend who does has sap pumps and vacuum, and he said that it was coming in, the sap was coming in during that time at 95 degrees, which is not good.
And I should mention that today is April 7th, 2012, when we're recording actually in the Sugar House.
Yep.
In Skowhegan, Maine. We've got a fire going right here. It's quite toasty. And it's a chilly day. How cold is it out today?
Oh, I'd say it's in the 40s.
So we had a day a couple of weeks ago that was in the 80s. It was like 80 degrees here in central Maine.
Yeah, there was sort of a blob of warm air that came all the way across the country. It hit the Midwest first, and Chicago had 3 days over 80-something degrees. And there were so many temperature records broken. Several of the temperature records broken in the upper Midwest were broken by over 33 degrees, which is unheard of.
Right. So you've never had anything like that here at the Sugar House, a season this is as weird as this?
No, I would say, I mean, you know, we've had weird seasons, but for different reasons. But, you know, I would say this is definitely an anomaly. This has never happened in March before. Not in Maine. I mean, it broke many temperature records right here in Maine by a lot. I mean, apparently they said that the earliest day it ever got to 80 degrees was sometime in late April before. And this was the middle of March.
And what's bad about that, you can explain the sugaring process, perhaps. You need to get below freezing at night and then above freezing during the day so that the sap will move, but it wasn't getting below freezing, right?
Oh, no, it wasn't getting below freezing. It hadn't gotten below freezing for like a week. And also, the sap doesn't keep. Sap is a lot like, sort of like milk. If you think about it, if you leave milk out at anything over, you know, 60 degrees, you leave it out in your house, it goes bad. It sours. Well, same thing with sap. You can't just leave it around. You have to boil it instantly. And so we were doing that. We boiled instantly. You know, as soon as it came in, we would boil. But even so, it just doesn't keep. Bacteria starts to grow in the tap holes and stops the process.
So you should have told us that because we tapped a couple birch trees out back just to see if we could get some birch beer sap. And, you know, we wanted to, you know, have the experience of doing a little bit of sugaring. So we got, you know, a gallon or so of sap after a couple of days during that warm time. But one jug we left, we didn't boil it immediately, and it got really cloudy like after a day.
Yeah.
We really had to boil it quickly.
Yeah, if you leave it, it will get cloudy and it's no good. We had a bunch of taps still out, buckets actually. We have about 30 buckets here, and we have about 300 on tubing. And we had a bunch of buckets out, and we kind of left them out there to see what they would do. And all the sap in there turned yellow and cloudy and really crappy.
Not good.
So we collected it and dumped it.
So how many, do you know how many gallons you collected this year?
Oh, probably a couple thousand.
And how's that different than previous years?
Well, previous years, we've collected a lot more. I mean, the tank kept filling up, and then we'd boil it off, and then filling up and boiling off. We get about 300 gallons, and then we boil off, and 300 gallons and boil off. This year, it's been, we maybe had a couple days, we got 300, so maybe 1,000 gallons.
So that was off from previous years?
Oh, yeah. This year, we made about a third of the syrup we made last year.
Wow.
And most years, this is about half of what we make on a normal year. So
last year was pretty good, but this year was quite bad.
This year was really bad. And it's not just us. I think it's all producers everywhere across the entire country. There are places in Pennsylvania, things like that, places like that, that did not get winter this year. They got almost nothing.
We had a very mild winter. I went snowshoeing exactly zero times.
Yeah, I mean, I went skiing a couple times, cross-country skiing, but really that was just, you had to just rush out there and go cross-country skiing. I mean, there was snow on the ground, but a lot of time it was frozen up. It was more like snow in March, the whole winter.
So that's what we kind of want to talk about here at Sugar House Journal. It's not just local people doing alternate energy things and farming and stuff, just as, you know, we want to talk about sustainable communities like people sugaring. That's a local a product, but we all also want to talk about bigger issues like climate change. We'd like to talk about the Occupy Wall Street movement, and this, we could even talk a little bit about the Tea Party. What would you say, Ivor, that isn't it weird that we're having an Occupy movement on the left, a Tea Party movement on the right, and climate change? Do you think those things are related at all?
Well, I think what's happening is there's more and more stress on the system. For example, you know, agriculture in the whole Midwest is in trouble because it's so dry. Mm. These places are already experiencing the effects of global warming. And there are people who will try to deny and change. But I mean, in the end, it's all of us. We are all affected by this thing. And it doesn't matter if you're Tea Party, Occupy, or just trying to sort of maintain a life as a mainline Democrat or Republican, you're still affected by it. And you may not realize it because our sort of the machine that feeds and clothes us and deals with us, it's going to keep pumping stuff out until it stops working. And you know, you may not realize it, but the problem is we are all part of the system. And a lot of us can see it cracking apart. And that might have been what really annoys, you know, a lot of middle-class people who joined the Tea Party movement. Mm-hmm. And the same kind of thing that annoyed a lot of kind of lower-class or Democrats or who knows whatever we are. I consider myself to be sort of a middle class, lower middle class Democrat.
Right.
You know, sympathetic with the Occupy movement. Well, I mean, those of us who are in that place are also kind of can see the problems with what's going on in the world.
Mm.
And we have a little different solution, but, you know, it's the same problem that has created both groups.
So is it a chicken or an egg type of thing? What's causing the stress that's going on in the system, do you think, right now? Is it an environmental stress, or is it a political that's causing the political stress, or vice versa?
Well, it's a little mixture of a lot of things. I mean, you know, we have us aging baby boomers. There's a lot of us, you know, we're all kind of part of the system. We've been holding it up for a long time, and we're all sort of starting to retire. But also, I mean,
so it's basically your fault.
Right.
It's your generation's fault.
You can always say it's our generation's fault. I mean, what the heck? I mean, our generation is the one that had all the cars and the central heat, etc.
Right.
But the fact is, this system is stressed. It's under stress. And you can say it's our fault, but you could also say it's the fault of the fact that we hit peak oil probably in you know, 2006, 2007, 2008. Right. And so basically, once you hit the peak of that key resource, then it's down from there. And then things like growth, which fueled most economies of the world, all wanted a little growth. Everybody right. wanted 3% more every year. And that 3% was enough to lift people out of poverty. It was enough to also give everybody just a little bit more every year.
Right.
So their money grew, everything grew. Well, as soon as we hit that, things aren't growing anymore. If we're not if we're very lucky, it'll stay for a while. We'll be on this plateau, but in general, it's going to shrink. And you know, even if it doesn't shrink, even if it plateaus, still a nightmare because these economies need growth. They need expansion. They need to keep getting bigger and making more.
Right.
So you know, we can find a little bit through efficiency. We can always find some extra in this
economy. And alternative sources and new technologies and general changing of behavior. But
yeah.
But you're thinking that it'd probably be a pretty wrenching change.
Oh yeah.
It seems to be, you know, it is interesting that right now you've got, like I said, the Tea Party movement, the Occupy Wall Street moment. You've got the Great Recession that hit us a couple years ago. And we've got $4 of per gallon of gas prices right now here in central Maine. It does seem like the wheels are coming off in some respect. Is that why you, we've talked about this in the past, is this kind of why you bought the sugar house to begin with? It's just some kind of a safe boat in a storm.
Yeah, I don't think it's a very good safe boat in a storm, though. But I bought it as an idea of a kind of a little farm. Bought it with a friend of mine who's a forester, and it's kind of a little farm that's useful for real people. You know, we're not producing bales of hay to raise some horse that we don't really need. What we're producing here is maple syrup, which is good to eat. We're producing wood for our households to keep us warm. And then little things like shiitake mushrooms, and of course recreation for us and our dogs and kids and things, you know. So it's kind of a neat thing to do that way. But so it was a sort of an experiment in a way to have a little farm to get back to that sort of thing. But I would say that it is not a lifeboat because we've already experienced, we've had a lot of trouble with people shooting it up and doing crazy things all the time. And I just realized Somerset County, where I'm living right now, is not going to be a safe place when it gets nasty.
Why? I mean, we have a great river here. You know, the Kennebec comes through here. We've got a good hydro plant that should possibly, you know, supply us with electricity. And there's certainly a lot of, you know, as we record this, we're surrounded by a lot of tall trees. So we have a lot of pulp and a lot of wood and natural resources. So why wouldn't this be a good place to be?
Well, we have it, but I mean, who actually owns all that stuff? I mean, we own this 20 acres, but besides this 20 acres, who owns everything? I mean, big companies pretty much own it. So you think about it like you know, the big companies that own all the woods, most of the woods in Maine, the big companies that own the water now, you know, the water power you're talking about, what they're going to want to do is as the system contracts, they are going to want to push their resource base harder and send that down to places that really need it. I mean, or they don't need it, but places where people can pay for it.
So that's interesting. Is that why you're on the side of the Occupy movement, if I can assume that you are? Because that seems to be a movement that's trying to control corporate power.
Yeah, I think we aren't going to be able to, you know, get back or whatever. And I don't think that we want to confront the power, really. What we want to do is we want to live on the edges of it. In other words, like, for example, here in a place in central Maine, if you want, you can go get for $5, you can go get a permit that'll allow you to cut some wood up on the corporate forests.
Right.
Which is not a bad move. And I don't believe in, you know, stealing from them or anything, but I do think if it's one of the perks that comes with living in this place, it makes sense to go and cut, you know, a couple truckloads of wood, whatever you're allowed to cut, and use that. And so I think there are ways to live here and glean a living here on the edge of the corporate forest. But I don't think that we're not going to be able to live, you know, a very cushy life here in Resourceville, where resources come from. We are going to be able to occupy this place and live here. And I think a big part of that is sell retail, not wholesale. We should not become commodity farmers, because there are people who do that and they do it very well, and they're mostly big corporations. What we have to do is we have to sell retail. We have to sell our brand, which is, you know, real maple syrup from the woods, wood that we've cut ourselves here, you know, little things.
Right.
Little things. And most of it doesn't go for money. Most of it goes for, you know, it's going to be things that we use. We're going to use our maple syrup and eat with it or whatever, or, you know, trade. So right. I think we've got to start up a more local economy that the bigger economy, the bigger corporate economy, they can't get in here and loot us, because we're impossible to loot.
Right.
We, you know, from when they look at us, there's nothing here, which is pretty much true. None of us have anything.
Well, then that's the goal of Sugar House Journal and both the podcast and the TV show that we're doing at local access stations, is sustainable communities. Now, we heard on the news recently that there is a, in Belfast, there's like an eco housing community. What's that about? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, that is Belfast Area Eco Village. And what they're going to do is they're going to have houses that are very, very efficient houses. They're very small houses, but very efficient, set on a 100-acre piece of land that's going to continue to be farmed. And so it's very close to Belfast. It's like 3 miles from the middle of Belfast.
Right.
And it's a beautiful piece of land, and it's a place for people to go and be. And like I have a friend who's from up in Wellington, and his plan is, as soon as he kind of retires, quote unquote, he's going to sell his house in Wellington, because they want to get sell the place, because who knows, somebody could break in there and steal all their copper, or, you know,
right.
Places just don't work very well, and move down to this place. And I think it's a good alternative. I mean, I think it's a good move. Because, you know, you're moving to a place where it's relatively together, and then you live there with other people, you eat together and kind of get into a group together and like-minded people.
Mm. Yeah, I think hopefully we can get somebody from that project on the show in future episodes. That would be, I think, very cool. Have you heard anything in the news about the development going up by Moosehead Lake?
Yeah, that was finally okayed.
Yes, Plum Creek, right?
That's Plum Creek.
Right.
And the thing about Plum Creek is, I think Plum Creek, you know, look, the whole state of Maine is owned by various corporate interests. So maybe there are a few places that aren't, but, you know, there's Maine public reserve land, and there's some stuff owned by Nature Conservancy.
Right.
But besides that, most of Maine's woodlands are owned by big corporations. And it's not just Plum Creek, it's Irving and different things. And Plum Creek did a particularly bad job of marketing itself. I mean, talk about branding. These people did not understand branding. So they came in here like a bulldozer, and they said, we're going to do this thing. And of course, they were pushed back at every turn. Meanwhile, a lot of other small developers, you know, rafting companies and different people, were able to build resorts and developments and things, and nobody ever batted an eyelash, you know.
Mm.
But I think what it is they had a particularly hostile and threatening way of dealing with the local area. But I think, actually, I was thinking about it, there's nothing the matter with that idea if it becomes housing for people to live in. I mean, I know they have a certain amount that has to be local, people have to live there also.
Right.
But if it becomes housing for people, and then it's not very far to the Greenville train station. So if you could get a train going again in there, you could have a sort of almost an eco-resort, eco-village up there.
Right. But do you think that's actually going to happen? To me,
no.
It's just going to be a lot of rich people away. They're going to have more mansions way out in the middle of nowhere. And then they're going to demand services. They're going to demand fire and everything. I don't see anything preventing the complete development of the Moosehead area and basically ruining this incredible resource, one of the best, if you know, major resources that Maine has.
Well,
that wilderness natural environment. You go up to Moosehead now, and what, we're an hour away from there, and all of a sudden you're incredible rustic. You might as well be in the 1800s, you know, in some respect. It's really wild and very rustic. Isn't that going to be lost from this Plum Creek deal?
Well, you have to remember that back in the 1800s, they had a steamboat that started in Greenville, went all the way up to Rockwood.
Yep.
And then there were huge hotels, 200 or 300 beds on Rockwood Peninsula.
Right.
Not Rockwood, but, you know, the one across from it, the one with Mount Kineo, Mount Kineo Peninsula.
Yeah,
they had huge hotels there. So I think we're going to go back to a model like that. And if Plum Creek was smart, what they would do is they would make a kind of a village out of it, and then they would have people getting around. And, you know, people of means might be up there, but at least it would be throwing economy toward the local town. So I don't know. I'm concerned about it, but I'm not as concerned because I think the days of crazy development are kind of over. I think they're going to be kind of like little pods, luxury pods, like you say, where people just kind of are there and they're kind of, you know, they kind of are going to be in this little world, which probably is going to have round-the-clock security and, you know, it's going to be expensive.
Well, I just see, you know, the world's going to have 7 billion people. If the climate changes, resources are going to be scarce. A lot of people from the south are going to move up to here. And I think a lot of people, I think eventually the Moosehead area will be, you know, a city or a very big town. I don't think it's going to have any of the qualities that it has right now. And I know you said that in the 18th century there was some...
19th century.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Up until 1800s. 1920s.
But you see pictures back there, it was still pretty wild. And today, I'm terrified that you're going to go up to Moosehead in 20 years and it's going to be like going to anywhere else.
It'll be like Winnipesaukee. The only thing, though, is I have a feeling that they're going to be more like outposts or gated communities or something, because I just have a feeling that, you're right. People will come from the south and they're going to move up here and things. But I just don't know how it's going to play out. I really don't. And, you know, I mean, for Plum Creek, this is just a permit to do it. They really haven't, you know, they're not doing it themselves. Some other group is doing it. So, I mean, who the heck knows what's going to happen? But, I mean, they certainly, it took them a long time to get it. And now they finally got it. And, like, well, let's see what happens. I mean, the housing market, you have to admit, is tanked.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I've been up around those places and, you know, talk about, like, little places like Wellington or, you know, small places up there that used to be, and they're really gone. Mm-hmm. There's nobody there. So I don't really know what this will do.
You know, I'm not optimistic, and I think it just plays into the Occupy movement. That it just seems to be there's less and less public spaces these days. You know, there's more and more corporatization, more and more privatization. You know, you can't just go up to public land. You have to get the, you know, you almost feel like a serf.
Yes.
Depending on the largesse of a feudal lord, but now it's the corporation. Can I come and stay in camp on your grounds? You know, it just seems like now that we don't have any space for the people anymore.
Well, that becomes the problem.
Are we going to go up north now? We're going to have to, you know, pay our fees to Plum Creek or ask their permission?
Well, they've actually been pretty good about
access. That's a depressing idea.
Oh, no, that's already there. You talk about it. You go a little further north and you have to go North Main Woods. You have to pay to get in the gate and to go into their land. So to use that land, you have to pay in north of Plum Creek land.
Well, for want of a better word, that sucks. I mean,
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, you know, we're all here looking for kind of a place where we can, you know, kind of outside of the control of the, you know, the corporations, etc. But in fact, they're more in control of the corporations are more in control of a lot of Maine. You know, we just saw the recent movie, The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And in The Hunger Games, there's District 12. And everybody just kind of like lives in a compound, which is locked down. And then they're allowed to go out and extract the resource for the capital.
Right.
And send it off on train cars, right?
Right.
And, you know, you think about it, there is a little aspect of that in Maine, if you think about it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, we're just District 12. I mean, you know, look at our towns are kind of generic. We have T1, R7, you know, and we kind of like, I mean, you think about it, what is the typical person in Maine? Either lives in a very small house or a trailer or something.
Right.
And, you know, the company lugs the stuff off, and, you know, none of us make make it too far. So I think, you know, in a way, we do kind of have to occupy. We have to, and I don't mean take it back in a, you know, kind of a militant, an illegal, right, militant sense. Right. I mean we have to occupy it back. Do you know that in this country, there's enough of the two drugs, OxyContin, oxycodone, those things.
Right.
Enough of that made to give every man, woman, and child every year 74 pills. Right. Now tell me there's that much pain in America. I think it's like the new Soma or something, right? So the big corporate interests, number one, instead of kind of like coming down on everybody hard, they'd rather just like drug us all, right? Get us all hooked on some kind of horrible thing and drug us. And, you know, the corporate, I mean, I make no bones about it. This corporate entity is kind of evil at this point. You know, it was something that would give us all, you know, it gave us all life and it gave us food and, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, isn't that the whole Occupy movement, at least it is in my mind, it's just things have gone out of control. I mean, corporations have a place and they certainly have some good things. You know, we're recording this on a piece of technology from a company. You know, home I have my HP computer and my iMac. You know, but isn't it now the fact that they're running the show?
Well, they've always run the show.
But now they're really running the show. Now they will buy, especially with Citizens United.
Yes.
In this anti-federalist reactionary Supreme Court that we have, they've really set it up now that we are corporate nation.
Yeah,
corporation nation.
Yeah, we become kind of this, and everybody freaks out about, oh my God, we should, you know, let free enterprise have its way. Well, the thing about free enterprise is they mean big free enterprise.
Yeah.
And I don't think big anything.
Yeah, is we're really not anti-business, we're pro-small business.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And right now, there's no place for much for a small business. You either have to get really, as we were talking the other day, have to get really big really fast or die.
Yeah, but I think
people are seeing now that there's a limit of getting big. When a company is so big that they can basically push around other countries, whole countries, and things are getting crazy.
So I think we've probably reached our limit of things that we want to talk about on our first show.
Is that 20 minutes?
Yeah. Excuse this noise. Yeah, it's 27 minutes. So we're going to try to keep the show to 20 minutes in the future.
Yeah.
20 to 30. And next time we hopefully will be a little bit more organized. But we just thought, I was over here cleaning his evaporator. I thought I would stop over and with the new recorder here and record a show. So.
Well, why don't we make it 30 minutes since we're at 27 already here?
Yep. Okay, so we've got 2 minutes left.
Yeah, 2 minutes. Well,
what would you like to rant about?
I just like to rant about, well, I think that the thing about it is these big corporations are the ones that, okay, they fed us, they housed us, they clothed us, all that kind of stuff. Well, that was great as long as they were doing that. And in Rome, the Romans were able to keep control and things as long as the dole kept coming in.
Everybody got the bread and circus, right?
Yeah, they got bread and circus. And I can understand that. Everybody wants the bread and circus. But I got to say, the bread and circus machine is starting to break down. And so a lot of us have to figure out ways of making our own bread and circus. And that's what, you know, we're about at Sugar House Journal is we're making, you know,
our own bread and our own circus.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and it's both, really. It's bread and circus. But, you know, you think about
it's local bread and circus.
Yeah, local bread and circus, which I think people go back to. And I think there is another way besides getting big and get big or die or whatever. I think there's too small to fail. I think you can do that. You can have a business that's so small and that is not big money. You know, you're not borrowing money to do it and stuff. So that it's so small that it's too small to fail.
I love it.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be the slogan of Sugar House Journal. Too small to fail.
Exactly.
Or at least the title of this episode.
Yeah. Now, I may be completely wrong. I mean, another couple sugaring seasons like this last one.
Right.
And we may not be doing the sugaring. We may, you know, call just it something else.
Well, yeah, just do wood and shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah, or I don't know, whatever, you know. I mean, as long as we can pay the taxes, we can keep going here.
Exactly. That's the idea of too small to fail.
So that's pretty much it for this show.
For too this small. Episode. Sugar House Journal podcast number one. So we'll look forward to future episodes. And thanks for listening. This is Nelson.
And Ivor.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.